You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
So imagine for just a moment that your child needs a kidney transplant. Without it, she'll die. So you go to the hospital, you want to talk about how to donate, who in your family might be able to donate, only to be told the hospital will not perform the operation. That's the story of 3-year-old Amelia Rivera. Amelia has a rare genetic disease called Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome, and as a result, she lives with mental impairment. She suffers epileptic-like seizures, she can't walk or talk, and she needs a kidney transplant if she's going to go on living past 2012. But the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where Amelia is treated, told her family just last week they will not perform a transplant, even if a family member donates a kidney. The reason, according to Amelia's mother, Chrissy Rivera, is because Amelia is mentally retarded. Chrissy Rivera wrote a blog post about this. It's turned into a petition and has gotten more than 24,000 signatures demanding that Amelia get her transplant. But sometimes it's not that simple in medicine. Art Kaplan joins us now, a professor of bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Full disclosure here, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where Amelia Rivera is being treated, is an affiliate of the University of Pennsylvania, where Art Kaplan works. So we're not going to ask you, Art, any specific questions about Amelia's case, but just about the ethics of this kind of case in general. Is that a deal?
Very good.
All right. First, I want to read this comment from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. They also do not comment on individual cases, not surprisingly, but they say this. The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia does not disqualify potential transplant candidates on the basis of intellectual abilities. We've transplanted many children with a wide range of disabilities, including physical and intellectual disabilities. We at CHOP are deeply committed to providing the best possible medical care to all children. So, Art, what are these complications that go into whether or not to perform a transplant that doctors and surgeons have to deal with?
Well, when you're dealing with a case like this, this is a genetic disease that has as one of its symptoms mental impairment. So there are other problems. People with this kind of genetic problem that Melanie Rivera has, they can have other malformed organs. She has all kinds of seizure disorders, and she's very small. She's physically just in stature small. So all of those things complicate transplant. And what happens is, I think the intellectual impairment is certainly an issue, and I'll come back to that, but it's the other problems along with it that have a transplant surgeon thinking, is this a good candidate for a transplant? Meaning, if your other organs are malformed, you may not live very long, even if you get the kidney, if your heart doesn't work right or your liver doesn't work right. Remember, you have to take all kinds of drugs after the transplant. And if she has seizures and gets immunosuppression to make the kidney transplant work, oddly enough, that can exacerbate the seizures. So there are drug interaction problems. And she's small. I know sometimes people will say, well, I'll volunteer a kidney to help that child. You can't put a big adult kidney in a very small 2 or 3-year-old girl, particularly one who's very small stature. So that whole list of issues is rattling around in the background on this case.
This, of course, obviously to any parent, it becomes devastating when they're trying to save their child's life. They know that their child will pass away without a transplant and then are told the transplant's not possible. I mean, part of these ethical questions are caught up in an idea, especially lately, that surgeons can fix anything now, right?
Well, Celeste, that's a very good point. I think people have an expectation. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I don't know if you know where the best place is to get CPR. It's actually on television. If you have a heart attack, immediately head to a television studio because on TV, that procedure works like 90% of the time.
Uh-huh.
In reality, in a hospital, trying to do things to resuscitate your heart probably work about 6 or 7% of the time. So we do have all kinds of high expectations that if something fails, these hospitals, and in fact they bring it on themselves a little bit, they tout themselves as, you know, kind of the last place where hope is, the we've got the technology.
You've got Dr. House performing miracles.
Very tough to do.
You've got Dr. House performing miracles every week on Fox.
Yes, absolutely. But I didn't mean to duck your question about the issue of mental impairment. The other problem that comes up is if you have a child who's going to wind up, say, institutionalized, well, it's a place where there's a lot of infection. There are a lot of places that aren't very good at monitoring somebody. Once you have a transplant, you need a lot of aftercare. So you have to watch to make sure that if there's any rejection of the organ, it's picked up quickly. A child who's got a lot of cognitive impairment can't tell you what's going on. In fact, this child doesn't speak at all. So you have to watch carefully. And loving parents say, yeah, I'll do that. And, you know, no problem. We'll do whatever it takes and we're going to be there. But for other kids who have cognitive impairment, they may not have the same social situation. So mental impairment could be taken into account because it really complicates follow-up care. So to put that another way, I think there are reasons where mental impairment and associated problems can make a transplant really tough to do. If you're just saying to somebody, well, we're not going to transplant you because you're mentally impaired, I think that's wrong. If you have connections from the impairment to the chance that the transplant will work, then you're starting to get something that makes more ethical sense.
We're speaking with Art Kaplan, who's professor of bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. But, you know, Art, for many people, they would feel that no matter what the risks are, knowing that a patient is going to die without the transplant would mean you'd take every risk, right? You'd take the chance that it would work.
Yeah, and certainly parents I've talked to them would say, if you have to kill me, then take out my vital organ and give it to my child. I want to make that sacrifice. The difficulty there is if you're the doctor or the transplant team, taking out someone's kidney or piece of their liver, that raises risk issues for the donors. And even though they're saying, do what you need to, it's my kid, I'll do anything, there's an ethic that says do no harm on the part of the transplant team. So they're not just going to do whatever the parent says, even if they say, take out both my lungs and give them to my child. Each one of those things I've had said to me by parents, they won't sacrifice or put at high risk someone to save another. It's certainly the case that parents and loving parents want everything done and every chance taken and any remote chance to help their child, whether that child has a disability or not. There are plenty of parents who would give up their lives to save that child. But the transplant team is bound by its own ethics, if you will, of responsibility. They're not going to go out and sacrifice people to save others. So that really gets in the way of what sometimes parents find it hard to hear.
It's not just that issue either, Art. I mean, the fact that transplant organs, donor organs, are so scarce, are so rare, means that in the end, sometimes people are faced, doctors, surgeons, hospitals are faced with these seemingly overwhelmingly complicated decisions on who gets the organs and who needs them first, who to give them to, who not to.
Right. Well, for the kidney situation, the current case at CHOP is swirling around somebody volunteering a kidney. But it is possible, obviously, to get a kidney out of the donor pool that come from those who die, whose parents generously volunteer. As you just said, Celeste, there are really very, very, very few kidneys. Happily, kids don't ride motorcycles and do all the things that turn people into organ donors. So there are almost none of those cadaver kidneys around. Intellectual impairment, looking at somebody's possibility to live, those things will weigh on the minds of transplant teams allocating the scarce supply of kidneys that are out there. Absolutely they do. Hopefully it isn't just, well, someone is impaired intellectually and we're not going to even consider them on a par with somebody else. But I think what happens is people say, if that condition shortens your life, if that condition makes it harder to make that transplant work, and we have four other kids who compete for that kidney or that heart, we're going to go to the one who has the best shot.
And no matter how many people sign a petition, that doesn't change a hospital's decision once they've weighed all these things that you're talking about?
Well, I think it does not. And I think part of the pressure to pay attention to not discriminating against disability, it's an important message to send. I don't mind having it sent. I think there is discrimination out there, and even transplant teams can be affected by it. It's certainly the case over the years. I'm not going to say there's never been a case where someone has just said flat out, you know, your IQ is kind of low there. I don't think we're going to transplant you. I think it's happened. I think people have discriminated against mental illness. I think people have discriminated against people with HIV and transplant over the years. So the message is important. But in general, what you're really trying to do is say, look, I've got a scarce supply of organs. If they're cadaver organs, how do I get the most lives saved? How do I get the most life years saved out of that scarce supply?
Yeah.
And when it's someone who says, I'll donate, I'll give you my kidney, well, how do I protect their health even when love and
all those
parental
come,
responsibility is driving them?
It's complicated. Art Kaplan, professor of bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We want to hear from you at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Post to our site, thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.